second episode of Whatever is Whatever with Maya Hislop. I'm Maya Hislop. So, I've been trying to figure out a way to introduce this episode. It was recorded before the tragic shooting in South Carolina. But I'm recording the intro after. And so I was trying to think of a way to introduce this episode without completely losing it about this awful, devastatingly sad and heartbreaking event. This massacre, shooting, terrorist attack. So many different ways of categorizing it, but I only wanted to say that I'm still going through a lot of numbness, a lot of terrible hopelessness, deep sadness, moments of lightness, moments where I honestly forget, and then I remember, and then I forget, and then I remember. It's just a very back and forth. But I did go to a vigil at a historically black church in Charlottesville about 2 nights after it happened. It was Friday night. And I'm not a religious person. This podcast is kind of all about that. But a severe calm took over at seeing black and white people. These were pastors, mostly, praying. And I literally saw them being rescued by their faith. Their faith saved them from desperate hopelessness, severe pain. And honestly, I always feel really uncomfortable in churches. I don't feel safe there because I have never belonged to a church, belonged to a faith. So I'm not familiar with the lingo. I don't know what to do with my body. It's a weird space for me, but it was just extremely empowering and helpful to see others survive, just not completely fall apart. And I feel like that sounds obvious. Of course, you go to a church, people feel better when they know that this thing that they call God, that they believe in, is with them at all times, and that love is with them, that feeling of salvation. There's really no better word for it. That's all I'm going to say. I could say a lot more. It's so obvious, but all of me is with all of the people who lost their family at the hands of somebody who hated them because of how they looked. I mean, that's so obviously there's so much more to it, but that's at its most basic and most base. That is what happened. That is what this person did to these people. So there's just enough to read about this. I don't need to say any more than that. I feel like I want this podcast to be a place to come when you're feeling like this, when you feel like there's no hope, to know that other people feel that they have ways of getting out of it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they also are still questioning, still seeking. That's very important to me. And that's, I don't think it's going to change anything. You know, John Stewart said, we see these things, this racism, these racist killings happen over and over and again, and we're still not going to do anything. I think we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to solve racism. Nobody knows what to do. And that is something very important to me about this podcast, is that we acknowledge the unknown at least a little bit, or engage with it in some way, engage with the fact that we don't know what we're doing, that we're just clueless. And sometimes that's kind of liberating. Sometimes it's scary. But that's what it is. That's, to me, like, the most true thing I can think of. So I'm really excited. This is such a good conversation that I had with Naomi Ekperigin. She is a writer and stand-up comedian. She has written for Broad City, one of my favorite shows ever. She's a writer on Difficult People, which is an upcoming show starring Billy Eichner and Julie Klausner. Billy Eichner is one of the funniest people ever, so you should really check that out. And I'm just trying to get through this intro. I drag these things on, I know. I just want to say that the sound quality is not the best. You'll notice that Naomi's voice is a little echoey. Forgive me. I'm working on the audio and learning about that. So just bear with me through that process, please. Our conversation was amazing. She's so, so funny. I laugh really loud a lot, which might hurt your eardrums. I apologize. But we talk about Catholic school, growing up in New York, Judaism, death, grief, anxiety, interracial relationships, things like that. So, and then we have a game at the end, standard, and it was just so, so fun. She's so smart, and she has a way of, an outlook that is really helpful for me, because she just has a way of balancing the negative and the positive that I find really, that I favor and I enjoy. So get into it. No, I need a catchphrase. So I always want to say catchphrases that other podcast people say. Like, Get Into It is from another podcast. I want to say Bye, which is a Cheska Lee thing. You'll know maybe these people. Oh, one last thing. The first few minutes of this episode, we spend a bunch of time talking about this show called Grimm on ABC. It's all about this guy in Portland, Oregon, who is a cop that also happens to be a mystical powers, and he can see people who happen to turn into various animals. Yeah, it's a great show. It was a great conversation that we had about this show. I like to engage the guest in a topic that I know they love or have a lot of opinions about from researching them or just knowing them. So I think it's kind of funny anyway. We just talk about the characters a little bit, and it's very short. But I just wanted to explain that. So, yeah. This is the second episode of Whatever's Whatever. Enjoy. God, I gotta come up with something better than that. Okay. So, this is like a really formal beginning, but I like to just, I'm going to have a whole intro that I'll do before, but I want you to say your name, if you have any religious affiliations, what they might be, and that's it.
My religious affiliations. Naomi Ekperigin. No religious affiliations.
Good. Okay. Not good. Whatever. So we're going to get into like the whole meat of everything, but I first really want to talk to you about Grimm, because you are the only person I know who watches that show.
I know. Grimm is very much a guilty pleasure. It's a guilty pleasure.
Good.
I mean, I grew up on Buffy and Angel and all this stuff, so I love that, you know, and so I knew when it had, is it David Greenwald? But it's got a couple of the Buffy guys who are the EPs and showrunners. So I was like, oh, I have to watch this, and like, I like the idea of it. It's a little more soapy than I would like.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like a little bit more humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I think was so good about Buffy and Angel, is that they had this, like, supernatural element, but then the characters were still, like, funny-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't turn it off. I can't not watch it. I can't stop. I love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part is when they change.
Of course.
That's, like, pretty much...
I'm really into Monroe.
He's my guy.
I like him. He's a looker. I'm into him. He's, like, a really good actor.
He's so good and so funny.
Yeah, he's, like, really good. I need Juliet to go.
Yes. That was going to be my next question.
What happened?
Oh, you think? I don't know.
I really hope so.
Me too.
She was annoying before. Like, she was annoying from the jump. Like, from the jump, to me, she was, like, the weakest actress. I have a theory that her teeth are bonded.
What does that mean?
Like, with some actors, like, it's easier, like, a faster than braces. They'll just, like, put nice teeth over your existing teeth.
Oh, like veneers.
Basically, okay. Yeah. And, like, I'm convinced she's got these veneers, and they're too big. She, like, barely moves her mouth when she talks. She has a stony, stony, dead face. And I'm like, you have to go. Oh, my God. Rosalie, the best.
Oh, yeah.
You can be pretty and still act.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is, so I find, yeah, but.
But Juliet didn't bother me as much until she started changing. And then I was like, why? Why are you even here?
I know.
At this point. Because they were kind of starting to get into this direction of her being also a badass. So, like,
right.
She's a veterinarian. So,
right.
Cool. Transition that. Into her, like, being a cool, like, having power to control what Besson do, or understanding, like, oh,
right.
They didn't do that, really.
I know, I felt like nothing much was happening with her, and then it was sort of that, they were like, okay, let's push her in this direction, because at least it gives her something to do as an actor, at least something different, but it never really made sense to me. There was one moment, literally one moment, in maybe the second to last episode, or third to last of this past season, when she set up the mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, the daughter, and you see her coming down the hallway, and she's hearing the fight going on, and there was a moment of, I think, actual good acting, where it looked like she was like, fuck, what did I do? And I was like,
yes.
I think...
Yes, I remember you talking about
that. But my thing is, like, if they want to make her go bad, it just felt like she went all the
yeah.
way. Like, in a minute, she was like, yep, this is me.
Yeah.
Fuck all y'all.
But it kind of, if she was a better actress, you're right, it would have made more sense.
But I don't know if they just didn't give her enough undertones or enough push or pull.
Right.
I don't know. Because it was kind of like, literally, it was like, okay, you were like with him for a long time and in love with him. And now you're like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to burn your house
and
to the ground.
Unborn child.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
It was crazy. Like, it was, but, and then the one thing is, like, on one hand, it's annoying, but I at least like that in the world of Grimm that, like, there are consequences to unprotected sex. That's, like, good.
And everyone's not married who's having sex. There's all these, like, unmarried adults.
Oh, well, that's always happening right on TV with attractive people. But it's just, like, I mean, because they really just had to work around the fact that in real life the blonde woman was pregnant.
Yeah.
You know? So they're like, okay, I gotta wait. But at least it was like, but I'm also, I'm not always on board with the whole, like,
that's my baby in there. No, I care about you. Oh, no.
It's like,
that was ridiculous.
I mean, you fucked Juliet. like for you, that was like, so now it's like your baby? And so now you're like, but I have to take care of her. Like, I don't think that's real. Like, I don't buy it. It's like my whole thing with Orphan Black. They're all like sisters. And I'm like, okay. You, like, barely. Okay, we're using this word a little too seriously. But no.
Yeah, I think. This is my last thing. With Juliet, there's also, like, the Mary Sue is, like, super into Juliet now. Badass she got, I think.
Mary Sue?
The Mary Sue is, like, a nerd girl. Like, MarySue.com.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Oh.
What is this?
It's really cool. It's very, like, taking really feminist points of view on pop culture stuff.
Okay.
And their recent big thing was
they were like, we are no longer watching Game of Thrones, which I was like, whatever. But because of the recent, like, Sansa, anyway, if you watch
Game of Thrones. But also, well, I know enough about it to be like, you shouldn't have been watching it from the jump. Right. Like, that's how Game of Thrones works.
That was my thing.
But
okay. With Juliet, they were like, oh, she's been so wronged. Like, repeatedly she gets fucked over.
Right.
Because first she gets put in a coma by that Adeline's cat. Then she has, like, terrible... Well, I don't even remember why, but when she was seeing things.
Yeah.
And then she's turned to it. Like, it's just repeatedly... Mm-hmm. So she was fed up. But I understand what you mean. Like, that doesn't really seem to justify becoming a complete crazy type of it.
Because I get... Because there was a moment, too, where she was like, I like having this power. All right, I'll even go with that. Okay. Like, it kind of works in line with, again, being constantly fucked over to finally have the ability to defend herself. Okay, I get that. But then you just being like, because I'm a hexen beast, now, Nick, you have to die. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's different.
Yes, yeah,
it's very different because we've shown that people can live in harmony if they choose to. Like, you can be a hexen beast. Unless, is there something literally, like, in the hexen beast DNA where they see a grim and must kill it? That wasn't made clear. Because I was like, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah. You're right. You've convinced me.
That's what I was saying. I'm like, you know, but I'm, you know, I will tell you this though. Some trouble now follows me on Twitter.
Oh shit!
She follows me on Twitter.
She's the best.
And I'm like, all right, I've arrived.
She doesn't have like the hardest job acting wise. I mean, she kind of just has to like scowl.
Right. And then the hair does most of the work. So
I was so excited when she was in the gym, and I was like, is she gonna get a love interest? Please. But no. So you started out saying something about supernatural, liking supernatural shows. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've always just loved that? Like, what kind of?
Yeah, that was like all of my thing. Yeah, because like Buffy probably came out. What was it? 7 years. So Buffy came out when I was like 13, maybe. So I watched that for. I mean, like, yeah, I've always liked sci-fi and stuff like that. You know, I used to read the Goosebumps.
Oh, no, the Goosebumps. All that kind of stuff. I was always too scared.
Really?
I was a scaredy cat. Mm.
So sweet.
Well, I loved horror, but for some, I think I was too young for the Goosebumps. And Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh, yeah, I love that.
But I loved being scared. I just was scared. You know, I wasn't like all about.
You like the rush.
But yeah. There was one Goosebumps where. Did you watch the show or you read the books?
You're
like legit. Okay. Where this kid goes into a store and he buys a mask and he can't take it off. Mm-mm. I checked out. I was like, no. But I think being drawn to the supernatural at an early age, to me, you can correct me if I'm wrong, kind of like speaks to having an interest in some alternate reality or like an interest in rethinking reality. Is that
No, I mean, sort of. I think, though... You know, and even in the stuff that I write too, what I really like about supernatural, and what, you know, I keep coming back to Buffy, but that was probably the first one that I was like thinking about in a conscious way, as opposed to just watching. But then also, Joss Whedon, he also went to Wesleyan, and like he's, I've heard him like talk about stuff, and you know, the idea. Well, I think what I really like about supernatural, it's really just the ultimate heighten of everyday emotion. Do you know what I mean? It is, you know, Buffy is high school at its most evil. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally every, it's like, let's take this common situation and how do we, like, take it to the max? And so, the same thing for, it's like, and stuff I like, you know, everyday life, but, like, with a spin, or, like, what if this was going on? Because, I don't know, most regular shows are, like, you know, if you, like, look at a script on paper or look at a treatment for something, it's like, okay, I don't know what that means. Like, what about that is supposed to be particularly interesting? The only thing that will usually elevate something is the characters. You know, either are the characters so unique or the actors playing that character so unique that you want to watch it. And then, but in the case of, like, sci-fi and fantasy, you have the premise that takes a really basic idea and makes it, like, engaging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just interesting because, so, the point of this whole show is to kind of understand where creative people come from in terms of how they understand the world. So, how do they understand their life, like everyone's life, sort of existential questions like that. So I'm wondering if things like Buffy, because Buffy to me was always kind of too scary, especially because the vampires had this way of looking that to me made them look, it was super like good for them. they were achieving their job, but like made them look dead, more dead than other vampires. Do you know what I mean? Like typical vampires, I feel like. Typical vampires to me always looked the same, except they had, exactly the same, except they had like fangs. But the whole wrinkle, kind of Klingon wrinkle
they
did, not that it made them look, it just made them sort of disfigured.
They're, yeah, uglier.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're ugly.
Yeah. And so, I don't know where I was going with that. But like a dark, it seems like as a child,
it's darker.
Buffy, yeah, a darker sensibility.
How old are you?
I am 26.
Oh, yeah. Well, there it is. You're getting a PhD already?
Yeah.
Well, then.
Should be done in 2 years.
My goodness. You're going to be a doctor.
Doctor.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Maybe. But so, yeah. yeah, I guess getting off of, we can come back to that question if it is interesting. But as a child, were you raised in any particular faith?
Christian. Mm-hmm. Non-denominational. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten to fifth grade. And then I went to private school on the Upper East Side, which didn't have a religious affiliation, but everyone was Jewish.
So. Which school?
Dalton.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dalton. Good old Dalton. So, what was Catholic school like?
Strict. That's about it.
Was it like nuns?
Yeah.
Full thing?
Yep.
Did you have nuns, the full confession? Mother. Did you have to do that?
I can't remember. I wasn't, I didn't get communion, so maybe I couldn't do confession. That's remember, but like, yeah, I mean, we went to church during the school week, so I went to church at least once a week, but I wasn't a big church person. Like, once I left that school, I wasn't going to church every week. We went to church more, not Catholic Baptist church, but more as a social thing, but it wasn't, it wasn't too much of that.
So it was never, you knew in the back of your mind, like, this is just where I go to school, and this is just a social thing, like, whatever kind of doctrine or God.
I mean, growing up, I definitely prayed growing up, but it wasn't, the idea of like a, I'm just trying to think, because it's sort of like, I guess I grew up like, okay, yeah, there's God allegedly, but I think there's a difference. Like, I didn't have faith per se. Like, I remember my prayers would just be like covering my bases. Like, I would pray and be like, everybody should be healthy. Great, thanks. But I think that's different than believing that there's a higher power that's taking care of you, and that there's like a larger plan, and that all you have to do is kind of show up and, like, you know, be good. I mean, like, you know, help other people actively, don't be a dick. And I didn't necessarily have that. I think that's different than faith. And because I definitely felt like from a young age, yeah, how can there be a God and all the bad stuff happen? And there was never really an act, there was never, I've never heard a good enough answer. So, yeah.
Who, do you remember, like, who you asked that of? Or it was just sort of a general, nobody can
answer. Probably asked my mom, probably asked one of the nuns. But yeah, I don't remember it being something. I'm so curious, what is it about faith that is particularly interesting to you in this discussion? Did you grow up religious?
I didn't. Okay. I have no affiliation.
Affiliation.
But my mom is culturally Jewish. My dad was raised Catholic from Trinidad. And my brother converted to Islam, and he was in college. So it's like a big old mixed bag of stuff. So everybody in my family seems to have something. But I recently sort of went through this crazy year of having like serious death anxiety. So I just like couldn't stop thinking about it. And it was on my mind. You know, just be sort of like washing dishes, staring out the window. Being like, oh my god, we're all gonna die. Like, what the fuck?
Oh my god, you should really listen to Andy's podcast. Because
I have been
in an existential crisis.
Yeah, always. It's like dipping now, which is, but only because I'm kind of ignoring, you know, and it just feels like that's kind of the only way. So I just had this awakening moment where I was like, nobody's talking about this. And every time I would try to talk to a friend about that, they would, it would be this like, oh, I'm sorry you're having this problem, but we don't need to talk about that. But I follow all of these wonderful comedians like yourself. And to me, those are the people in society who are always interested in talking about the things nobody else wants to talk about. So it originally was like, I'm just going to talk to all black female comedians about God and like whatever they want to talk about related to that. And be like a black Judd Apatow. Because, you know, he was like a fan and he would just go around before he was like a big deal. He would just, he has an interview, he would just go to clubs in like the 80s and he was this kid with this little recorder and he would just record all these comedians that he loved. So yeah, I'm curious, it's like a crowdsourcing mechanism. I'm curious how other people deal or don't deal with these questions, basically. So when you're out of Catholic school, you're like praying, and then you go to a heavily Jewish school. Did that? Because I know, at least as a New York kid, having so many being exposed to so many different kinds of things also makes you go, well, why is there this one thing? That people, like, why do people stick to one thing if there's all these other things?
Well, I didn't experience Judaism as a religion, you know? Well, listen, growing up, too, before I went to Dalton and knew Jewish people, I didn't make a distinction. You were white. White people were white. And then I get there, it's like, well, I'm Jewish. I'm like, I don't understand what you're telling me. You're white. And so it was...
Would they get upset, like... I'm not white, I'm Jewish.
No, but it was more like that was even a discussion taking place. Right. Then I was like, I don't really know why we're distinguishing. Like if you walk down the street, you'd be white. But obviously there is a very real, probably, you know, not so distant history of Jewish oppression. So, you know, you can definitely see like I get that, but I'm like the way you navigate the world, you know, like I grew up, people were white, black, Asian, like Latino, like you just like, but that was kind of about it. And so, but then also, like, you know, I grew up, I started there the year before, like, all the bar and bat mitzvahs. But, like, to me, that wasn't a religious thing. I knew obviously it was, but that is a party. That is a almost like an adolescent thing, you know? And it was like, so, like, socially and culturally Jewish, you know?
Did you miss the Torah reading? Because I always went to the after party for the bat mitzvahs, like,
Oh, you saw the Torah reading. I still know, like, a half Torah portion from all the bar mitzvahs I went to.
Oh, wow.
Like, still have it in my head from all the ones I went to. And
you're
so,
more Jewish than I am. That's true.
So it was just like, but I didn't have a connection. I didn't connect that with God or anything like that, you know? I mean, I didn't even know what they're saying. Like, so I have no idea. Like, right. I'm reading this portion, I bet it's meaningful. It's going to have something to do with something. But so, yeah, so I didn't really associate it with that. And so it didn't really keep religion alive for me in a specific way, you know, even though obviously we would like have the holidays off, you know. I'd probably do more Jewish stuff now being engaged to Jubu, like going to his parents' house for Yom Kippur and like legit like fasting for the day because... They're like, you can eat, but I feel like an asshole. It's like, they're all starving, and I just, like, roll up to the fridge, and I'm like, about to make a sandwich. So I just, like, do it for the day. But, you know, and then, like, I've gone to temple with them a handful of times, and, you know, I'm like, all right. But it's interesting, because even that, I do think of it, especially, you know, he's from suburb of Pennsylvania, and he grew up with very few Jews around him. It's funny, because I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, we're at your parents' house. Like, we only roll with Jews. And he's like, because my parents know all the Jews. Like, he's like, you're not a lot. So, you know, so I see, so even that, like, they go to temple and stuff. His parents be like, it's very much a social, cultural thing. There are not a lot of them, so it's like, this is where we get our community. But I don't hear talks of God or like Yahweh's got us or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing rather than.
Yeah.
But so would you convert?
Of course.
Yeah.
Why not? But again, I don't care.
Okay.
Like, it's not. But, yeah. Because, like, to me, like, I would convert, like, you know, I say on stage how I can't wait to be Naomi Beckerman because that's like the Jewiest thing. Like, I think, like, it's funny.
Yes.
Like, I think it's just, like, funny. Like, I would just be like, yes, I am Jewish. And they would be like, what? I'm like, I don't know.
The only thing, yeah, I could think, because I understand it doesn't really have any faith-based, like, importance, but that when you are there for Yom Kippur, it's like, of course she's not going to eat. Like, it yeah. wouldn't even be a, but maybe once you get married, that's just also going to. It's like, now we are one person.
Yeah, but not really, because it's funny, because Andy is not religious at all. Like, he doesn't, yeah, I would say he is, wait, which one is it?
Jewish atheist? Is
that atheist? Or is it agnostic? I always get them confused.
There's a term called Jewish atheist, which is like Barney Frank. It's on his Wikipedia page. He's like the gay, first out gay Jewish politician. Somebody in California.
How sweet.
Yeah.
Barney Frank.
Yeah.
I just think his name is too funny.
Oh. But he, Frank. Yeah, it's on his Wikipedia page, Jewish atheist, so I guess.
But see, that's the thing. That's where it's like, okay, well, Judaism as a cultural identity and as a social group.
Right.
He's like, no, but let me let you know. I come from an oppressed people. But I'm not into the God part of that oppressed people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so going back to Dalton, was there, you just had these Jewish friends, did they ever, I mean, because there's like such a spectrum of faith among Jews too. Mm-hmm. I don't know on the Upper East Side, but in New York, right, yeah. Like we are, I remember a friend of mine who's from Greenwich, Connecticut.
For the listeners, Maya just made a face that was, well, you know.
You know, she would admit this, but we're in a car and we're driving to like a party in Bushwick or something. And it's like high holidays and all of the Hasidim are coming out and they're walking around. And she's like, who are these people? Like, what are they doing? And I was like, ha ha ha, you must be joking. Right. Like, these are the Hasidim and they are, it's like holidays or it's Sabbath or whatever. And just being like a kid on the train, right? Like,
yeah.
Seeing people in hijab, seeing people like in all kinds of garb. I agree. Like, I never saw those people praying.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just, it's almost like these costumed
right.
characters in my life, like in the movie that is our lives, right? Like coming into the scene. So like you can't know what's going on behind that faith because you aren't. You're only exposed to it on, like, the train or in the public
right.
spaces that they go to.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm just, like, making sense of what you said because it's really interesting. So, you aren't, like, thinking about God, but you have prayer. Was there a
growing
sense...
Up.
Where, yeah, growing
yeah.
up. Where did you feel like I'm okay because of that? Or it wasn't even... Like, cause for me, I get a pit in my stomach every now and then when somebody says, like, because I have religious friends, so when they pray at dinner or they say, like, my cousin is also Muslim, she'll say Inshallah or something, and I get like, oh, I don't have that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't have something
mm-hmm.
that I call to that I'm like, thank you.
Right.
Or I know you're there kind of thing.
Right.
Do you feel that? Like, I'm backed up by something, even though I don't, like, go to church all the time or because I got baptized or because I prayed?
No, I don't. It's interesting. It's something that I don't really engage with at the moment. It's just that I believe that there is a higher power and that for some reason the sun sets and the sun rises no matter what we do. The fact that Earth even exists is like, all right, yeah, that's pretty dope. I didn't have anything to do with that. Nobody I know had anything to do with that. You know, we can't even go back generations to know who had anything to do with that. So there's something bigger. But that's like a very broad, cosmic sense. on the much more present level of human interaction, the environment, both immediate environment and larger Earth that we are insisting on destroying immediately. I don't really know. I think that it is just like, I don't know if I'm going to go anywhere after I die. I don't believe so. My grandmother passed away in October, and that was the first person for me, which I guess is saying something, like it's a good thing. You know, like, she died in 98. It was the first person close to me who died. And so, and I remember we had a viewing, and I didn't live, like, it was really hard for me. I was like, fuck viewings, fuck this. Like, my biggest problem was, like, she's about to just, like, go in the ground. And that, I mean, that answered my question. That answered your question, too. I'm like, oh, well, if I think that she's about to go to the ground, then I don't have a concept of, like, heaven or, you know, whatever. I'm like that was the part that was fucked. And then Andy, he's like, Jews, we don't do viewings. And I was like, I am down with that. You know?
What do they do?
They put you in the ground.
They just do it. They do it and then they shiver.
Yeah, fucking sit, shiver, chill out. I'm like, yes. That's it. Like, fucking cover your mirrors. Because, like, I know it was like, what are you wearing? You know what I mean? My mom like was upset about some outfit or whatever. And it's like, it shouldn't even be about the fucking outfit. You know? I'm like, yes, cover up your mirror, sit in the house, roast the dead. Roast them like joke roast, people, listeners. And like, eat whatever you want to eat. I was like, that's what it's supposed to be. And like, because I believe that grief is like private. And I don't, like, you know, I'm not, you know, even our whole culture now of like, someone passes away like a celebrity and everyone gets on Twitter, you know? I don't like public shows of grief. I believe we're all hurtling towards nothingness. So our main job is to try not to be shitty in the interim. That's it. I was talking to a friend last week and she was saying though that she's really like separate, like she's really been thinking of her soul and her body separately. And it's helped her, because we're talking about kind of like body confidence and feeling good about yourself. Where she's like, you know, she's like, if this whole body is just like a receptacle for my soul, then I should be nice to it. And sort of like that idea of taking care of yourself and being physically active and eating right as a way to preserve the storage unit, you know? And she's a religious person. She goes to church and always has, and like has a really strong Christian faith. But it was interesting. Like, I guess what I'm saying that is saying, okay, well, right. If my body and soul are separate, then perhaps, yes, once my body dies, my soul will go somewhere else. But I won't really be able to tell anybody about that. No, will I? Mm-hmm. We don't know. If I get there, I get there. It's just what it is. Like, it's like, if I die, like, at best, like, I love to, like, haunt some shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd be, like, down for that. Like, I'm much more into maybe turn my sci-fi. I'm, like, I'm much more down with being a ghost.
Yes.
I was like, I would haunt the shit out of people.
Who would you haunt?
I don't know. Whoever pissed me off most recently.
Why are they always haunting people? Like, why don't they just go... I would just hang out with the people I hung out with before and, like, watch them.
But that's what haunting is. That's the thing. It's the way humans see, like, the way it manifests on our temporal plane or whatever. Maybe a ghost is just like, hey, I want to hang out with you. And then it, like, gets too excited and knocks over something. And then you're like, I'm being haunted. And you're
like, eh. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
I was so hoping you had a good ghost story.
No, I don't.
I used to think there was a witch kind of following me.
Go on.
When I was young, but I think I wanted there to be. I was like,
how young?
I was 8.
Were you like friends with the witch?
I had.
Or you just sensed a witch presence?
It was a sensing. But I think I was like, I hope I would kind of be doing something and then turn around and really like saw the imprint of like a witch. I was like, I think I just made that happen. You know, I was kind of conscious, like, my mind is making that happen.
So you weren't afraid of it?
I wanted to be. I like being afraid. So I was like, I hope there's a witch so I can be afraid of something. Which I think is actually how my death anxiety plays out too. Like, I need something to be anxious about.
Right.
So I kind of create something. Do you have that?
That's the part Drew with, of you. That's the Drew part of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Evil love level anxiety.
It's a late onset. It actually happened, like, after my grandfather passed also. He was older, 93, Jewish German man. But he left my grandma. And that, she's, like, definitely atheist. And I don't think she had ever thought she was going to die until he died.
Mm.
And it totally made her, like, super depressed. She had, like, has dementia now. I think, caused kind of a psychotic break.
Mm-hmm.
And that freaked me out because I was like, I think I'm scared too. And what if I get there and I'm still scared?
Right.
And then I'm just like, gonna die. I'm scared. I don't want to die scared is my whole thing.
Right.
So you're not gonna die scared. That sounds really nice. You're just...
Hopefully. As long as my death is quick and painless.
Ah.
Because my big fear is anything in between. I'm afraid of being like a paraplegic or quadriplegic. I'm afraid of being... like having an illness that slowly takes me, you know, then yeah, I'm gonna be afraid or unhappy. But I'm also something like Andy, he like is like, I wanna live forever. He's like, freeze me, keep me going. Me, like the moment like my joints swell, I'm like, I'm out. Like, I don't want, like, once I can't do the things I wanna do, you know, my grandma was like doing her thing. I mean, she probably died over, it was October. We had seen her for her 90th birthday in June. She probably started to get sick in August. So August, September, October. So it was like a couple months. And there was a deterioration to the point she couldn't walk to the bathroom. You know, we had to help. You know, her body just went.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, you know, that's hard to see. Like, I just remember even her where it's like, she sat on that couch. She knew she was dying. You know, she knew she was going.
Like, you could see.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
I'll like maybe for like a week. Maybe a week. I gotta say some things to people, write a couple things out, so I can like get it in a row. But no, any longer than that, I'm not having it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can feel. I definitely sympathize with that. But what I do to. Because I don't know if you think about, if you're, like, in a car, if you're driving or if you're on a plane, do you think about crashing?
Yeah.
Do you think about it going down? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been flying.
There's some Jew in you, too.
Oh, of course. I'm a comedian. I would fly by myself from a very early age. I would go from New York to Detroit to visit my grandma. I would go there every summer. So I started flying by myself real young. And so I was always, like, oh my God, I'm getting in this big thing, and like, what if I die? And I always find that when the plane takes off is when I get anxious. Once we're up in the air, what can you do?
Oh.
And I literally, it's that kind of like that slow ascent, and you can kind of feel it in your stomach, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm nervous. But then it's a feeling of sort of like, again, it's in between. I kind of like, if I'm up in the air at like 30,000 feet, I'm probably not going to feel my actual death. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to hit the ground so fast, it's going to be instant. Dope. going down, yeah, I get that there's some fear, but it's like, there's certain, like, when something is just, like, inevitable, when you're like, there's nothing I can do, you might as well chill the fuck out. What could I possibly
do? Yeah.
I know
You could worry about it so much that maybe it
wouldn't happen. Right. That's, I know. Sometimes
that is mine.
I used to have that feel. Like, about certain things, I realized, I was like, oh, I'm worrying because I feel like if I'm not worrying, I'm not doing anything. Like,
yeah.
Worrying certainly feels like an activity. It can definitely take all the energy out of you. But ultimately, it doesn't serve you. And so it's kind of like, well, all right. I'm like, not, you know, it's not going to change this. So it's sort of like, I might as well enjoy as much as I can, you know? Like, if a plane is going down, I would probably be annoyed because I wouldn't, like, have any good food on hand. That would be the thing. I'm like, ew, I'm going to die having eaten peanuts.
Would you just get up and start, like, telling as many jokes as you could? Like,
no.
No.
I would
like. That's, like, the cheesiest idea.
I know. I mean, I might turn on my phone and try to send a tweet, but I don't even think I get a signal. maybe one last tweet
to be
read on Fox News. Do you know like what they do? Like people like that's also the nightmare too. Like when something happens to somebody, someone dies, and it's like her last tweet was. I would just have to literally tweet something so that my last tweet wouldn't be like Juliet crazy hashtag real. That would have to be it.
So how was high school? How was Dalton? Just kind of curious.
Sucked. Next question.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the only reason why I'm, it's because I talk about it so much that I'm like,
okay.
They were all rich. I was not. Everyone's white. I'm from pre-gentrified Harlem, so it was a very big deal. I have some friends from there. Not very many. I have teachers who I still keep in touch with. You know, obviously, with Facebook, more people come out of the woodwork and you get to kind of keep up with people. But it just feels like such a different...
Yeah.
It's just like so...
Arms length.
Yeah. It's just very like, you know, when you grow up wealthy, you just don't really know what's real. So I can't really talk to you.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have any...
It's weird. I have a friend from there who I know from college who's like a white boy who listens to hip-hop. So he's like, to me, like an enlightened, the more enlightened white people. And he had like a Hispanic girlfriend at Dalton. You know, like to me, I thought Dalton was like this more kind of multi-culti place. But
well, you're a bit younger than me, and it definitely did get multi-culti when I left. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, so like it's definitely much more so. They really did a big push for diversity, you know. And so, yeah, there are more people there, but I still think you're still going to bump up against class.
Yeah.
You can't talk race without talking class. Like, I was a mentor very briefly for a girl at Dalton, but she was a junior maybe in high school. She started in kindergarten. And so I'm thinking, I'm like, what you need me for? You need a mentor. You've been up in here. But we would talk, and it would be some of the same stuff where it's like, she's like, oh, I like a white boy, but he would never like me. Or like, you know, she's like, yeah, they're black girls. She's like, but we... It's either all the black girls are friends with each other, or they're not at all, and it's like we're in our different areas. So still say, there's just more of them, so you can have a little bit more of a group.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh, it's. I mean, you're still going to have those same issues, because it all kind of depends on not just that you have these brown people here, but how are you teaching the majority to engage with them? Because if you're teaching the majority, they're like, there are brown people here now. You should be nuts. It's like that doesn't really help, you know. It is obviously wonderful that I mean, what I got at Dalton is an excellent education, and now nobody scares me. You know what I mean? Like, rich mean girls will teach you some shit. You know, like I was never cool. I was never badass. Like I was like quick to like cry. I was like, everyone hates me. I'm like, but
that
it's
is
like kind of
really
a,
hard to believe, like or to.
It's real, you know. It's a lie. It's all a lie.
Yeah.
But they it make so now it's like, you know, when I go into places, like it's one of those things like I can go anywhere and make it work. You know? Mm-hmm. I grew up by cousins who, you know, were like, how could you kiss a white boy? Or like feeling who like when they're around a white person we start to talk differently, you know? And it's like when you're just not comfortable and don't know. And so I was like, I don't have that. You know what I mean? Like that's it's like I can go anywhere. It's like, oh yeah, I got you. Mm-hmm. Let me get your name's Rachel. Yeah, I got you. You know, it's like
yeah. I mean, that also to me speaks to a very like familiar comedian. Like at some point, a comedian is like the underdog or has been like.
I think about outsider's perspective.
Yeah,
that's like what I always say about comics because I think there are a couple things because. I was just thinking about this too last night or the day before. Where I was like, no self-respecting or no self-loving human decides to get up in front of people and tell jokes. You have and because there's a certain need for attention and validation on a very large level that normal people don't have. And but then also, so that's like I think the major difference because I think there are tons of funny people and thoughtful people. You know, you talk about like. You know, comedian maybe like sees things differently, and it's like people, a lot of people do, but but not, most people don't feel the need to get up and tell it to a bunch of people and have them clap and look at them while they do it. So that's that. But then I think it's also just a matter of a big part of successful comedy is having a unique voice and a unique perspective, and usually taking a universal truth and then just kind of filtering it through your own perspective. And a lot of that comes out of being an outsider. If you got a lot of time to yourself, you got a lot of time to think about shit. If you are in a space where you're different, then you notice difference in general, you know? And I think a lot of comics, like yesterday, Michelle Boutal, who's a hilarious stand-up, she had a brown titty brunch. And we went to eat, and it was like me and like five other comedians. Well, one woman, she's like a host of the Food Network, but everyone else were comedians. And, you know, it was funny. I had done one of Phoebe's shows, and it was like, we all have white boyfriends. And I was like, okay, we need to talk about this. we almost all went to white schools, you know? Sashir was there. She went to UVA.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like that, you kind of come from that, and that's what makes you have something to say.
Yeah. So the last few things, because I know, we're good on time. But before we get into like a little game, I feel like you did mention something about when you're on stage, like even though you don't have faith in something specific, that there is like a presentist thing that happens, or like you're in the moment. Did you say something like that?
When did I say it?
Not here. No.
Oh, okay.
When you were talking to Andy about self-trusting.
Oh, yeah. About, being, like, when a show is really good, it is a feeling of being completely connected to myself, like, to my body, to the material, to the stage, to the audience. Totally present. Your head isn't anywhere else.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And is that...
That's as close to God as it probably gets.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I know that in those moments, all is right in the world. That's a good... Yeah. It's probably... Like, I just don't think, too, it's like, you think I want this as my career? I will never be able to afford nice things. I cannot have a child because I don't have money for a child. but literally, like, when that's going right, it's like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, I sit at desks and I'm like, so this is how I die? Like, you know, I can't, like, it's just, it's not, you know? And so... That's a feeling of, very much like, oh, I'm on a path. Like, I'm on the right path. So, it's just like, oh, this is the thing that's supposed to be happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you feel that when you met Andy, too? Like...
No. No, not at all. Andy, I mean, no, honestly, Andy was not my... Andy is shorter than me. Andy lived off the G train when I was living in Harlem. Which, for listeners, hey, that's like a world away. It's a world away.
It's like at least 2 hours.
Oh my God. It's like, it was a long distance relationship from the jump. And he was like doing improv comedy. And I said, I was like, no comedians. There can be only one diva in this relationship. Me. Like, I was like, not having it. But I thought he was cute. And he was, he's a little bit older than me. And he had come, you know, from like teaching. He was getting a PhD and he was like an adjunct professor. And I was like, okay, he's got a little bit of like a little thinking. He's got a little backstory, especially in the comedy world in particular. Like, I met him in a scene that is like full of 24-year-olds whose parents pay their bills. And I was like, I can't. And so he was like, cool. But he was not the person. He was not who I thought I would be with. Ever.
Who did you think you were going to be with?
I don't know. Like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Oh, my God.
That type.
That's the greatest type.
Yeah, that guy. Like, I like...
Tom Hardy.
Like, yeah. Like, I mean, like, tall, rugged, masculine, you know, like, I fetishize father figures. Not an actual dad, but you know what it is? I would always say, I was like, I want a guy. Like, I like a guy who could be a good father. Like, capable, patient, strong. I got this. Andrew is a wonderful cat father. He's a wonderful father to our two cat children. But it wasn't the same. But I realized that I, you know, when you have your idea of what, because what I'm telling you, though, it's interesting. There's an idea of what that person looks like and what your life looks like. And then there's how you feel with a person and how they treat you. And ultimately, not even ultimately, but obviously, that's the more important thing. And, you know, I really was like, you know, I'm like, I'm always talking about like how I love me a tall glass of milk. I was like, especially too, like I'm 5'8", I'm not skinny. I wanna feel dainty.
Yes.
Fucking sometimes. Yes. No. But then it was like, well, what has a tall man done for me lately? Do you know what I mean? You can't hold on to this idea of something. Because I realized that, like, you look at these people and you're like, oh, this is, because I'm always talking about it, I'm like, this is why this is gonna work, and this is why this person's gonna be perfect. And then they're not. And like, it's hard sometimes that we're both in the same field. But it actually is really, I mean, it could go either way. Because sometimes, like, I wish we weren't both struggling and hustling. But let's say Andy did, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish we would just stay a professor. And you know, like, but if that was the case, maybe he wouldn't be okay with the fact that I have to, like, up and go sometimes, you know, or that I have to cancel and play last minute because I have a show or whatever. But the fact that he is in it, he completely understands. You know what I mean? And so, nobody's perfect. And so then the question is, can I work with you? And that's another thing, too. Like, Andy and I, we work at our relationship. And we put the time in and we value each other. You know what I mean? Like, even today, you know, we're both getting ready, getting up, and then he's like, we haven't hugged today. And then he, like, opens his arms and, you know, he hugs. And I'm like, I love you, Andy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but it's just, like, somebody who thinks about that, you know what I mean? And then, like, then it, like, doesn't matter that he's shorter than me. He's just the cutest thing in the whole wide world.
Did he make the move? It was all him? Like,
no.
Oh.
In the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was me. But it's funny. I said that, we were just talking about this, too. I was like, you are high maintenance, my bitch. You had me working for it. Like, well, he'd asked me to hang out a couple times, but it was very vague, and I didn't see that as a move. So we hung out, and I tell him to this day when he was like, we should hang out. And I was like, bitch, you said that in a Facebook message? Like, day. I was like, I would have not. He was like, I asked you to hang out out of nowhere. What else would I have been doing if I didn't? I was like, Facebook message, please. And so he had definitely initiated us hanging out and stuff. But when I decided I was ready to kiss him on the mouth, I was the one who went to Greenpoint. I was like, wow. I came to Greenpoint on a Tuesday night. I'm here for one reason.
That's a commitment.
I know, right?
But what was the conversation at Brown City Brunch around interracial? Like, did y'all just,
we were just like, we all just know it about each other. But no, we didn't really talk about, we were just kind of talking about, you know, different stuff we're doing. Career-wise, work-wise, men, of course. One of the girls had broken up with this dude. And, you know, and she's, you know, busy and working her career and hustling. And he was all like, it really upsets me that you could not find time to call me. Or whatever. And then he's like, I'm done. And she's like,
okay.
It's like, if you need me to parent you, don't have that kind of time. Mm-hmm. So we talked about like, a lot about that. And just, yeah.
But was interracial dating ever an issue for you? Were people ever judgmental? Or
oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Like, I dated a guy, I mean, not so long ago. That's something like 2006 or 7. I was with this white dude. Israeli vegan investment banker who did his semester abroad at Morehouse.
That is a special collection of words.
I know it is. Really special. Really special. But he lived in Portland on the 25th. He was on the east side. And one time we were just walking. Oh, no. One time we met late. And this black guy, older black man, on a bicycle. We like walking down the street. He on the bike on the curb next to us. And he was just yelling at us ferociously. And we hadn't even we've been dating like 3 or 4 weeks. Like something very fresh where it was like, shit. This is what this comes with. Like, you know, yeah. like we went through that. I mean, but now, you know, it's so crazy. Of course, Andrew and I, we've been together 5 years. We've lived up here probably 3. Like, never once have had an issue. But I always joke to them. I'm like, if a black man does say something, I'm always like, Andy, you know what that means, right? That means I'm looking good today. Because okay? When I look regular, they ain't saying shit. Okay, they're like, take her, bless. But if I'm looking good, oh, they all angry now.
I was watching one time like a MTV True Life, which is one of my favorite
things.
Oh
my God, yes.
And it was like interracial dating. It was a white guy and a black girl in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting like basically heckled
mm-hmm.
by these black guys who were just like, oh, she want that money. Oh, it must be the money. And I always thought that was such a weird, I mean, men always, like, I feel like that's such a standard like deaf comedy routine.
Yeah.
It's like, women can't go down in life. Like that Chris Rock, like women are obsessed with money and like material things, which I always get really angry about, but I don't know why.
Because it's not true.
It's not true, right?
That's why you're angry.
Thank you.
Because it's reductive and not true.
Yeah. But like that race also speaks to that idea, right? Like, oh, he must be successful.
She race and class.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, she couldn't just be with him.
Right.
There has to be a reason.
Right.
Yeah, I always thought that was weird. But so did you feel like dating a white man?
I took your moment to figure out what to call him. Yeah.
I feel like when I talk to other black women, it's like, that white boy is crazy. You know, it's not a white man, it's a white boy.
That's because you're at UVA.
That is why. Did it feel like it put your blackness in question? I mean, that's to me like...
Girl, I went to Dalton. My blackness was in question a very long time ago. Like, it's like when I was going to like... I'm like, I went to Dalton Wesley. No one should be surprised. No one should be surprised. You know? It also has to do with... Well, because that's the thing, right? That the stuff I do, like, you know, again, going to Dalton, going to Wesley, and I was a film and English major. There were no black men in the film major at all. There were two black women and two, I want to say South Asian men, maybe? But just, like, let's look for that. Or, like, I did improv. There were no black people who did improv, period. There, you know what I mean? Like, I was just in worlds where who else was I going to meet? And then you get to, and it's kind of like about, like, do you get who I am? Mm. Who's gonna get? And Andy and I went to his house for the first time. He had all of Buffy and all of Angel on DVD. Okay?
And your heart just
went. And I was like,
vagina.
I was like, so there. Of course. You know what I mean? Like, you have that interest. You know? If you had come in a black package and had the interest, sure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, but it's more, I think, just a matter of where I've been and what I do, and then, you know, your friends, who you're hanging out with, and who you know? So it's like, you know, I remember my mom saying to me, too, like, she wanted me to go to, like, Howard or something. And she, I remember her saying, like, she's like, you're not going to find a boyfriend because there are barely going to be any black men, and they're all going to want the white girls.
Wow, she said that shit.
And I got my first boyfriend my freshman year. I was like, well, we're doing all right. I was like, we're making it work. Like, it's, you know, and so that wasn't true.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get that thinking. It's like being old school, but
very
it's also
school.
Like, you know, it's like she's old. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So another part of the show that I think is, like, something I'm interested in is how blackness and Christianity are kind of grouped together
mm-hmm.
sometimes. And W. Kamau Bell is on Pete Holmes' show and was saying, I think he said it before, but that black people can't be atheist because we would never have made it out of slavery
mm-hmm.
with that kind of thinking. Like,
right.
We need
something.
Yeah. And I don't know, what do you think about that idea? Or is blackness and Christianity, are blackness and Christianity merged in some way, in kind of an American, like, public way?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. And I get that. I mean, also, but, like, also, too, think about Judaism. I mean, because you grew up with a Jewish parent. Like, because that's the thing, I always say, like, Judaism is, I thought at least it started out as a religion, right? But then by virtue, I think, of the Holocaust and all that, it obviously then became a cultural and almost racial identity because they were like, we will now eliminate you for being Jewish. And so then the Jews who made it out of that were like, now it's like a cultural identity. But...
And also, I think that moment also put God into question, really, because it's like we're being we're being crucified, persecuted for our faith, and God isn't helping us. So what's the point?
But I think in both groups, you know, less blacks and Jews, you have faith as sort of all you have left. Mm. And so, in some ways I wonder, this is simplifying it, right? But for, let's say, a Jew who was born after the Holocaust, but obviously grew up in the wake of it, would you maybe think, my religion got me, was so damning that people wanted to get rid of me, I'm gonna hold on to this. Mm-hmm. So then you kind of, you're like, oh yeah, well, this is who I am, this is part of who I am. And now I'm talking about black people. But I think it's that same thing of and I do agree, it's kind of like, if you were an atheist, if you had no faith, you would have never gotten out. What is there to hold you? What is there to hold you up other than a higher power? Because there's absolutely nothing about your immediate circumstance that is hopeful. So if you don't hold on to the idea that there's something more, there's no way you're going to make it. I mean, and then it's kind of, you know, what you were saying about when you hear people pray and you're like, oh, that pit, I wish I had that. But I do think atheism and agnosticism are privileges in a way. I think there are privileges for when you grow up having opportunity, you know, when you do live in a circumstance that is pleasant enough that you don't have to lean so hard. I do. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, or even if you look at, people who talk about, Islamic extremism and stuff, and I'm like, shit, if I grew up, I'm going to serve a basic level. Hot as fuck? Real simple. When you tell her, listen, Maya girl, I don't do heat. I keep a very unpleasant sweat. So if you told me I'm going to live, I'm living at 105 degrees every damn day. Parched as fuck. Broke like none other. My only introduction to Americans were probably a bomb that dropped this one time back in the 90s. Oh yeah, I'm about to live for heaven with 75 virgins. I'm about to live for 75 virgins. You know? Not that I'm keep doing what you're doing, but I get how that seed can be planted and how it has room to grow when you don't have other options.
Black radicalism. I mean, for a more American example, right?
Yeah.
We're going to take our guns.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my... I'm very much into that line of thinking, but I think you take meaning and hope from life, which I'm, very jealous of. it seems to me you don't have that need for getting external hope, but you're more interested in finding it internally. Is that... You said something I'm going to... rely on myself. Like when you're on stage, you're never more connected with yourself and your body and material.
Yes, I do. But I will say, in a lot of ways, I feel like that almost does manifest itself as that is a higher power. Because if my brain exists in a constant state of you're ugly, you're fat, you're awful, and that's my internal baseline, when I am in a place where that falls away, that's bigger than me. Something has taken over my default wheel spinning to let some fun come through. And so it, in sort of kind of what I was saying before about, let's say, body and soul is separate. I've read a lot about spirituality and this idea that, God or higher power can be within you, you know, or if we say if it's, you know, if God is just good, orderly direction, you know, if it's just gentle, loving kindness towards people, that is, that's a part of all of us, right? If God's real, right, we're allegedly made in His image, then we've all got a little God in us. And then the question is, so I guess it's more so, yeah, maybe about finding that in myself, finding that, hopeful, positive, comforted part, you know, underneath the,
I've been having this thought lately that God, for for me is life. Mm-hmm. Like, all I have, all that I know and all that we have, that we, that is certain for me, is living.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird, like, how that can manifest itself into another kind of anxiety. Like, I'm not living enough. Like, what does my life to mean today? Like, it means to bear some kind of meaning, which for me just looks like paralysis. And like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to watch hours and hours of something.
Yeah.
And forget it. And I think there was something from your conversation with Andy, like, oh, wait, like, taking time to sit with yourself. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't.
But he like, does something that I totally do, which is listening to podcasts a lot, or just kind of, like, busying your brain in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It as a way of sort of just distracting yourself from yourself, right? Like, you can be your worst enemy sometimes.
Right.
The wheel spinning thing completely. But, and so confronting yourself, being forced to take time with yourself, I'm starting to think, like, that is another way for me to look at things like God as life. Like, my life is just sitting right now in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really helpful for me to hear from somebody else. Kind of corroborate that a little bit.
I think so too, you know, because I definitely know what you mean about was like pushing stuff off and being like, I'm just going to sit and watch hours of this. And I think though it's even about in those moments and like when you recognize yourself doing it, the question is like, are you happy? Because there are times, like I will tell you, there are times laying in my bed with my cat children. Yeah, it might be 4 in the fucking afternoon and I got shit to do. I am happy. I feel good. I feel good. Like, it's like, it's amazing.
Yes.
When I, sometimes I got petty, like, and the cats, they came with Andy. He had them, so I didn't have the pets before. So I've, like, and I'm like, it's like, I'm surprised at how happy just petting an animal can be. Where I'll literally be like, this is just, like, so sweet and satisfying. And so, granted, if we look over our, like, ledger or whatever of the day, I didn't do much. But I had moments of happiness. It felt good. If, you know, I think the issue, and I've definitely had this other side, where, like, if I've sat around all day and I'm like, let me get up, what the fuck are you doing? Ew. Then that's the problem. That is not using our life or, you know, like, not spending our time.
I love that so much. Because, yeah, sometimes you're watching something or doing something sort of that seems lazier or non-productive because it's distracting you from yourself and your negativity, right?
Yeah.
And just spiraling that negativity. But sometimes, yeah, I'm just like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Like, summers as a PhD, you can get, you know, little, like, excursions to do research. You can do, like, summer jobs, but mostly when you're at this point, which is I'm at the dissertation writing stage, I just need to be writing.
Yeah.
And that's hard. It's hard to just, like, write all fucking day.
Yeah.
And read all day. So, yeah, there are just points or long periods where I have to just not do.
Right.
And sometimes they're the best moments.
Yeah.
But I think I'm so lucky that I get... it's like that spiraling... That can spiral too. Like, I'm so lucky that I get to do this, or just have the luxury to do nothing all day. I should be, you know, so grateful. It's just like this, another kind of, like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Like, that moment always kind of seizes me.
I mean, I often, obviously, like, being a creative person, like, writer too, like, where if I'm on it, if I have work and I don't have, or I don't have work, and definitely, like, I'm not someone who does well with unstructured time, but, you know, I really try to tell myself, I'm like, enjoy this while you can. Enjoy the freedom because you're not going to have it all the time. And so if I can enjoy it, but then again, but then also too, the freedom does not mean doing nothing. Freedom means, you know, waking up each day and getting to make a choice as opposed to, I've got to fucking get on that train. If I don't get on that train by 8:45, I'm going to be late. When you have the ability to make a choice, it's like, just enjoy that you have the choice for right now. And then it's like, you know, getting up and, like, doing stuff. Like, I know my work schedule is really loose right now, but it's funny. Like, I forgot, like, until last night. I was like, oh, right, I'm doing a podcast tomorrow. I got to get up. Like, it's like, you know, but, you know, like, Andy and I have our monthly show tonight, and we're going to do shows and like I put stuff on my calendar to keep myself busy because I even though I have work that's like due, I'm gonna do more in 2 hours than I'll do in 8 any day.
Yeah.
So I just make it busy, and I like to set up stuff earlier because if you weren't coming at 12:30, I could have been in bed till 12:30 or 1 easily. Even though I have stuff to do, but I still want to just lay there. So it's like I try to make sure I have something up between that starts between 12 and 1 every day. Because if it starts between 12 and 1, I have to be up at 10. And it's like, I just can't make myself. It's like, and even what you said about your brain spinning, I play games on my phone in bed for almost an hour. Like, I'm literally like, time to go to bed. That's actually time to get ready for an hour of playing games. Nonsense.
I almost feel like games is better than, I just like do Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Oh my God.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
I know. I do go on those from time to time. It's funny. My Twitter though, I just go to see who's like added me. I just go to add. I'm like, anybody talking about me? Anyone want to see me? But I don't want to know what other people are doing. I do not. Andy loves him on Facebook. Not love it, but it's his default. I think he doesn't love it, but it's his default. He's like, this is just what I have to do. I'm not looking. I'm not on a newsfeed. I don't want to know. It's just going to make me crazy.
Yeah.
It's just going to make me crazy.
You know your triggers.
Yeah.
That's an important thing.
Yeah, I'm like really good at just like, I'm not. Like, I'm pretty good. Like, I don't. It's funny because I was even thinking, I'm like, oh, there's some dudes who I'm just like exes who I'm still friends with on Facebook. And I haven't even like looked at their profile. I don't know.
Oh, no.
But I haven't unfriended them.
That's like a lane I can't go down.
I know.
At all.
But I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely.
So we've like gotten to such a positive place.
Oh, how wonderful.
I feel like the meaning of life is life. Like our conclusion.
Yep.
There's hope.
Yep.
There's good stuff.
Don't be
and
a dick.
My last question is, can you be my therapist? So therapeutic and nice.
Wonderful. Yes, I do work on a sliding scale.
Time is up. Check at the door, please. So we're just going to do like a little rapid fire.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready.
Okay. Kim or Kanye?
Neither.
Oh, for real? Oh, Kim all day.
Kim?
I love Kim Kardashian.
Wow.
She's so great,
you kept that till the end of the video because it would have colored our entire conversation.
Okay, I just need. It was gonna be rapid fire, but I want a little bit. Neither, really?
Neither.
Okay.
I think Kanye has some talent. He just doesn't know when to hush. I don't like when celebrities, particularly ones without college, like education, insist on presenting themselves as authorities in anything.
In anything. He went to college.
He went to art school. He dropped out.
Did
he? Wasn't it the whole album? He dropped out?
Oh, yeah.
Did he drop out?
You're right. Okay. I'll buy that.
All next. Right.
80s or 90s?
90s.
Yeah. Disney or Pixar?
Disney.
Jaden or Willow? Smith.
Yes, I know. Willow.
Ooh. This dimension or another?
This dimension.
Yeah. Bread or crackers?
Bread.
Mm. Chipotle or Taco Bell?
Chipotle.
Stay in or go out?
Stay in. Oof.
Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy?
Chris Rock.
Flannel or plaid?
Flannel.
Jeans or dress?
Jeans.
Meat or vegetable?
Meat.
Breakfast or dinner?
Breakfast.
Stars or moon?
Stars.
Flan or creme brulee?
Neither. I don't like that texture.
Okay.
I don't like the texture of cold snot. I don't do puddings. I don't do...
cakes.
Yogurts. Yeah.
Cakes are good.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I got a cake. I could have got creme brulee. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. Thank you for coming all the way on.
Oh, my God. It's so nice here. I had to come. Couldn't you say the, like, this tag came up randomly, but I'm just going to keep it. That's So Raven? Can you say that? Is that like...
What do you mean?
Just say That's So Raven.
That's So Raven.
Thanks. Now I know it's over.